Hello and welcome to another edition of the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. I'm delighted to be joined today by my co-host Ellie Hurst. Hi, Ellie.
Hello.
And by the illustrious and long-time friend of Advent, James Morris, former MP for Halesowen.
Hiya.
Hi, James. So, James, what I wanted to talk about today really was this new venture of yours, the CSBR, Cybersecurity and Business Resilience. And I thought maybe you could start by giving us a little bit of background of what's happened in the last 12 months, maybe why you thought the CSBR was needed, and what is it really? What's it all about?
After the election last year, I with a couple of other guys were thinking about where the gaps were in thinking about cybersecurity and business resilience. As you know, Mike, I've been the chair of the all-party parliamentary group for cybersecurity and resilience in I think I did I actually I think I did two terms, as it were, as the chair. And during that time, I thought that there was an opportunity to start thinking about policy in that kind of interrelationship, if you like, between cybersecurity and resilience and business resilience. Often that they'd been treated as two kind of separate streams in a way, but with the nature of technological development and so on over the last few years, the increasing convergence. So we launched the CSBR, Cybersecurity and Business Resilient Policy Centre, in November. Actually, I remember it was about 2 days after the general election last year, and I woke up after the after having about 48 hours sleep after the election, and I drafted out a policy programme for the CSBR and started thinking about what we might do. And as I say, so we launched in November in the House of Lords because chairing the advisory board for the CSBR is Baroness Neville Jones, who she was head of the GIC under David Cameron, who was Prime Minister. The focus of the CSBR is to drive thinking and policy across the whole range of issues that are currently out there in relation to cybersecurity and resilience. We want to build a community of interest, and what I mean by that is obviously there are people in industry, there are vendors that are interested in cybersecurity, there's the academic community, there's the policy making community within government. The CSBR is kind of sitting at the center of a network there. And we've kicked off two pieces of work initially in the first kind of 2 or 3 months since the launch. One which you've been participating in around AI and healthcare and the security, cybersecurity and data issues which arise when we think about the increasing application of AI within the healthcare system. And also last week we kicked off a piece of work around the Cybersecurity and Resilience Bill, where coincidentally, the day before our roundtable, the government produced its first policy statement on that bill, because that's quite that's an important piece of legislation, designed to address some of the issues which have been arising around ransomware attacks on public sector infrastructure like the NHS and other issues. And there's lots of other things that we want to get into, issues to do around international relations through the AUKUS relationship, the resilience and otherwise, from a cyber point of view of the transport network. So we're looking to build and develop policy and influence the policymaking process.
Sounds really interesting, and I think it's right that you say cybersecurity and business resilience have often been viewed as separate from each other. When certainly Ellie and I have talked at length over the years about how actually they are very much part and parcel of the same discussion, isn't that right, Ellie?
That's it. It's, fingers on the same hand, really. But I think you tend to find that with a lot of issues around cybersecurity and how it relates to other business and organizational functions. It's grown up a little bit like a weed external to everything else and sort of acting upon the business rather than being seen as an integrated part of everyday life for everyone. It's not just resilience, in which it's siloed from everything else as many other areas, but obviously it's very important to bring those two together, because of obviously the nature of the threat landscape changing. Resilience therefore is in an equally volatile and challenging situation. So this is the right time to be doing this.
So the CSBR, James, is very much intended to be something that influences and makes a difference. It's not just a talking shop or an opportunity for people to sit around a table and discuss ideas. There's actually an intent to make a difference at the other end as well.
Well, we've got a very good relationship with the all-party parliamentary group, which is a important cross-party access into to parliamentary and policy thinking. So, as you say, we don't want to just be a talking shop where we come up with ideas that could then get converted into reports, which just sort of sit on shelves. We want to get into the distribution of the ideas and make them into practical reality in terms of government decision making and in terms of the legislative process. So if you take what we're doing with the Cybersecurity and Resilience Bill, that's a live kind of situation where the government is proposing some legislation and we are responding and wanting to influence it. So yeah, it's we want to get into the sharp end of reality here, converting ideas. That's what I was talking about kind of reaching out to business, reaching out to industry, to make sure that whatever legislative proposals come through, whatever ideas are generated, actually have some practical traction in the real world, and to build that network. And that's why we're calling ourselves a kind of policy centre rather than a think tank. And most of the people that are involved in the CSBR, I mean, I was. As I was in frontline politics for 14 years, but I was in business for 20 years before that as an entrepreneur. The chairman of the CSBR, Adrian Jolly's got a big background in financial services and doing a lot of work around kind of issues around payment fraud, as is the director of policy, Andrew Churchill. So the people involved, and then the advisory board that we're developing has got a mix of, again, parliamentarians. There's a guy called Tim Watson, who's professor of cybersecurity at Loughborough University, who is leading quite a lot of work that the Turing Institute is doing in relation to defence. So we're trying to build a broad coalition of interest here and make what we do have practical application, as I say, in the real world, because. This is an important, the reason why we're getting into it is because it's an important agenda for the future of the country. The resilient national resilience and its interrelationship with national security, especially at a time, if we can put it this way, of slight geopolitical turbulence around the world, which is so impacting on this kind of discussion. So when we were talking, if one was talking about cybersecurity and resilience, even maybe 8 or 9 months ago, you're talking about a different kind of economic and political context, and so that needs to be taken into consideration. And we want to, so the, and if you take the subject of AI and cybersecurity, there's obviously a huge amount of noise, as it were, being generated, new innovations, people, new ideas and new thoughts coming through literally every day. But what we see from the CSBR's point of view is that there still needs to be some, careful consideration of the landscape. I don't mean that we all kind of, deliberate for 10 years and then, come out with our encyclopedia, but to do some proper work on thinking about these things and developing the networks to make them happen. So that's where I think our distinctive proposition is. And Yeah, as I say, it's partly about building a community of interest to get that kind of two-way flow of ideas working. As you know, people like you, you know, working in the coal face of your clients and you know other companies and people working in this space. You know, we don't have a monopoly on wisdom, but we can act as a way of facilitating that and driving it into sort of practical recommendations for policy.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because that broad church of thoughts and backgrounds, you know, with business, with academia, with policymakers, actually we avoid any potential of groupthink, which can sometimes happen. We get a lot of like-minded people together. And I found that when we did the AI and healthcare roundtable, that was very much the case. You know, we had some very innovative technologists, we had academia, we had lawyers. I, you know, waved my flag in the corner from the GRC perspective and the data governance side of things. But it was what I was encouraged by was that it was very collaborative and not confrontational at all. It's everybody knew that everybody else had a part to play in generating that discussion.
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, part of the kind of modus operandi, if you like, the CSBR is, and the way that we're running our round tables, you've experienced the sort of both of the first ones that we've done, is that, you know, we're posing some questions, but not trying to kind of, you know, predetermine what we think the answers are before we've actually had the discussion. So sort of going back to first principles, and in both of the round tables that we've done on AI and healthcare, and then the one that we did the offices of Akamai Technologies the other day, was to get a very diverse group, as you say, so to make sure that because, as you know, in different industries and in different in different areas, there tends to be kind of paradigms of thinking, you know, that develop over time where there are just common ways of approaching problems. And what we're trying to do is bring together a mixed group of people from different backgrounds and really try and, you know, get underneath and ask some first principle questions about, you know, the areas that we're looking at. And that then it produces quite a good discussion. I mean, the challenge is then to take that discussion and, you know, turn it into kind of, you know, research work and workable streams. But it's a good starting point to kind of try and stir up the pot a little bit, if you like.
So you need people that are actually invested in having their own assumptions challenged as well, so that they're happy to contribute, but they're happy to listen and think, oh, well, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, or yeah, that's something that hasn't really, you know, crossed my mind before, because, you know, that interconnectedness of everything type of thing needs to happen with the thought as well. And that you're quite right in saying that this is something that is frequently missing from these sorts of discussions. Everybody brings in, you know, their little box of thoughts and they just wait for their turn to speak. And then their turn to speak comes and then they drop it onto the table and, you know, and that's it kind of thing. It's like that's as far as you get. But I think if you have got an open mind and you approach it with an open mind in that you might be learning something as well as contributing something, then I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, because I think my career, I mean, I'm not a technical specialist. I mean, I've had a quite diverse career with, as I say, business, politics, policy making. I'm not a sector specialist in that sense. And I think that's helpful in the sense that, as you say, it's about joining the dots, bringing people in, and converting that kind of expert view into something that's usable and practical. But yeah, that's the way that we're approaching it. It's a kind of methodology of kind of, you know, look, let's look at these problems from first principles, like with the cybersecurity and resilience bill. You know, what problem is it actually trying to solve? You know, where could there be unintended consequences for taking a particular approach? You know, is the way that we're approaching regulation the right way of doing it? Are there other ways of looking at it as a way of, you know, just stimulating that general debate, that general conversation that might lead in interesting directions?
And that's really important because we live in a period of intense technological change where innovation is happening ever quicker, which is not the way in which legislation works. So you know, there are challenges there in trying to tackle certainly cybersecurity threats with legislation alone. So it's
probably that's a really, really good point. I mean, it is true. You know, that was one of my experiences when I was a legislator, as it were, in Parliament, which is you're right. You know, the way that our democratic parliamentary procedures work is not aligned with a world that's kind of changing at lightning speed. And yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the critical things about some of the legislation which is being proposed, which is that it ain't going to solve the problem by passing a law in Parliament. I mean, it sets the context and sets the tone, if you like. But if you think about cybersecurity and resilience, it's about a whole society effort in combination with law and regulation. Because I think, as you pointed out, I think in the round table that we had, you know, you can come up with the most sophisticated regulatory scheme in the world to manage this process and encourage better compliance and so on. But if there isn't a real kind of cultural and societal drive, then your level of compliance is probably going to be quite low, and your chances of achieving your goal are going to be quite low. So it does need that whole society approach. And I think we still haven't really got that in that, you know, recent assessments by the NCSC and the report by the National Audit Office talking about government vulnerabilities. And, you know, these are quite serious messages that are coming out about the vulnerability of our critical national infrastructure. But yet there isn't a kind of sense of kind of underlying urgency there among, you know, across the citizenry, if you like. And I think you're only going to drive changes if you get good legislation, but in combination with a broader, more concerted effort to raise awareness and to get people to realise the nature of the threat we face.
And business resilience is not just, you know, if we perhaps dial the volume down on the cybersecurity element for a moment and dial the volume up on business resilience, you know, just in the last 12 months alone, we have seen numerous examples of where failures in resilience have massively impacted the citizen themselves. Most recently, Heathrow Airport, but, you know, failures in the supply chain, in the London NHS incident with the private laboratory. You know, there's so many times actually when that lack of resilience and lack of resilience planning actually ends up with a real life impact on the citizen themselves.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and they can be galvanizing points in the journey that I was just describing, and then suddenly, you know, there is a national debate, public debate starts about how it could happen that an electrical outage at Heathrow could bring Heathrow to a standstill, and what are the implications of that, and what does that mean? So in a way, an unfortunate incident, but actually did help in galvanizing a discussion about the nature of business resilience, and, you know, a debate about the vulnerabilities of critical national infrastructure, which is an important thing to have to have on the agenda. Because this is, you know, again, one of my experiences when I was in Parliament as the chair of the all-party group, that despite the fact that cybersecurity and resilience and business resilience were very important, you know, factors in our economy and society, parliamentary interest in it was relatively low, because it's sort of seen as a kind of slightly narrow, slightly technical subject. And part of the advocacy, and again with the CSBR, is to broaden that out so that there is more interest and more engagement with the issues around resilience, so that we can really have this kind of broader public debate in which parliamentarians and others are taking part. So that's sort of part of the mission as well, I suppose.
I was just going to say, sometimes the problem is sometimes the problem is the use of the word cyber and cybersecurity, because people have got a very definite association with what that is, and it's a someone else's problem. When you talk about resilience, that's much more inclusive language, and it's programmed to make people feel like they're part of a solution. So I think bringing the two together is enormously important, to try and make that connection for people, to connect them to the issues and the threat landscape and the things that are going to face them. Because I was reading some research recently that said, you know, close to 80% of respondents to a particular, I can't remember which piece of research it was, unfortunately, just the general public talking about their concern about the UK's reliance on technology when it comes to public services and how vulnerable it makes them, because so many people have been on the receiving end of an outage of some description, whether that's public services not being available through their local authority, or, you know, perhaps, you know, their banking apps not working at a critical time in the month, that sort of thing, because of, you know, a lack of resilience through ecosystems, which include cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think your point about language is a very interesting one, an important one. You know, as you say, kind of the connotations of cybersecurity have been that it's seen as being a kind of IT issue and whatever. I think that's changed over time. I mean, you know, if I think, you know, we've been through, well, I think, the like four iterations of a national cybersecurity strategy. And I think it's true that in boardrooms, I mean, I don't know whether this is your experience of, you know, in boardrooms or within business owners, there is more of an awareness of what needs to be done around, you know, making sure that I'm, you know, my business is more secure and that I can't just rely on my IT people to sort it out for me. It's got to be something which is front and center of my business strategy, if you like. I think that has changed, but there is still, you know, a much further to go. And I think you're right that when it's set in the context of resilience overall, then that sort of changes the terms of the discussion. You know, at a board level, if you're thinking about a, you know, a large company, it changes the terms of the discussion, and it makes the importance of the board owning the process rather than delegating the process to somebody else that you know, which, as we know, can cause a lot of difficulties and problems, and it becomes a transactional exercise.
Yes. It forces the point of leadership, so it forces it upward and into a position where it can actually be viewed as the same, at the same level as resilience is viewed throughout the organisation in a lot of other areas, you know, whether that be, you know, through human resources or, you know, financial resilience. You know, it needs to be considered in the same way. And I think for too long it has been considered as a kind of separate entity, a Wild West that operates in its own way. So I do think that progress has been made in that way. I think there is a long way to go, and it may be the case certainly with larger businesses, but, you know, the UK is made up of many, many smaller businesses who need to adopt the same mindset in their approach to resilience as well, and start, you know, bringing cybersecurity, information security, resilience into leadership more.
Yeah, and I think you are right, James, in that when you talk cybersecurity to a board, there is what I would describe as a nervous exploration of the subject. When you start talking about business resilience, then senior leaders are much more comfortable with having that conversation. But it's also interesting that we're working with a couple of companies at the moment that are growing through acquisition, and increasingly part of that acquisitive process is cyber due diligence, and actually including that as part of their wider due diligence about what they're buying. So that's interesting as well. So I think something is growing.
That's a very interesting development in terms of, again, you know, due diligence traditionally is about, you know, looking at whether or not you've got the kind of customer relationships you said you've got and all kinds of other issues to do with that. But that to have due diligence now, you know, being thought of as being about cybersecurity and resilience in the context of an acquisition, I mean, that's quite a significant development.
Yeah, really interesting. So what's next then for the CSBR? Obviously, we've had the two roundtables we've discussed. What's the year ahead look like for you?
So we're focusing on coming up with some recommendations around AI and healthcare. We're about to publish a policy brief on the cybersecurity and resilience bill. So that should be coming out in the next few days. The output on the cybersecurity and resilience bill is really a series of questions about that came out of the round table. So those will be things that we'll get into the public domain and continue to debate about, but they will be the first kind of published substantial recommendations from the CSBR. And then we've got two projects which we're looking at, one around the AUKUS relationship internationally, because as you'll know, it's got a couple of pillars. The first pillar is about sort of sharing essentially nuclear technologies. But the other thing is about cybersecurity, and there's quite a lot of interesting discussion at the moment about the kind of durability of those relationships internationally. What can we do more on an international basis? Again, taking into account the fact that there's increased geopolitical tensions with the US taking a very different posture in the world, does that impact on that? So that's a bit more of an international one. And then we're talking about doing something around transport, which is, you know, looking at cybersecurity and resilience around the transport network, with the increasing use of data and so on within the transport network. So quite a diverse series of things, but very interesting, and taking the same sort of model. We've only been, as I say, we were kind of an evolutionary process. We've only been in existence for three or four months, but we're quite pleased with the reach that we've been able to get and the sort of broad range of input. It's steady as you go, but we're hoping that we can have some real influence.
It's interesting you mentioned transport. Ellie and I were at the NEC for an event this week where they're trialing a autonomous shuttle bus. Of course, with autonomous vehicles comes a huge amount of focus on data. And of course, security has to be part of that as well. And if we're going to have an autonomous transport system, then resilience is going to be massively important there.
Exactly. So I think that's where, you know, that's where we want to look at, you know, interrogating the implications of these developments in lots of different sectors. But we don't, you know, we don't want to pick off more than we can deal with, if you see what I mean. So yeah, we're looking to get our first outputs out there, develop the community that we've got, bring more industry players into our network, you know, a lot of interest, develop the advisory board, develop this overall community, and get some policy out there, as a way of influencing the debate. We've had a good start and a lot of interest. So, you know, and then, as I say, there's very much the other side of it, which is around skills and behavior and culture, which is a kind of an equally important stream about how we get more societal engagement with this whole agenda, which is a slightly kind of softer, but you know, equally important stream of work.
And I'm pleased that you mentioned skills, because I noticed as well, just in the last couple of weeks, there was a parliamentary roundtable on cyber skills. So although in the past maybe cyber hasn't been one of those things that Parliament sees as important or as sexy as some other areas, it certainly seems to be something where there is more interest and more engagement than there has been previously.
Yeah, I think that is true. I mean, I think it's because of the fast moving developments that we've got. I mean, you know, there's this kind of greater awareness of AI, which is dominating discussion overall, and its link its link to economic security and economic development? Because obviously, you know, the UK, part of this debate is also about, you know, the economic health of the country and the future of economic productivity. Because we're living through a period where lots of people are trying to unlock a sort of productivity puzzle of the UK and how we can improve our economic performance. And I think, you know, AI, cyber, and trying to get some of this stuff right is quite fundamental to that, because, you know, our whole economy is a service-driven economy, largely, and dominated by, increasingly dominated by digital services. So I think that's contributing to a kind of greater awareness of what we need as a country and where our distinctive competences are as a country, because, you know, we have the capabilities to develop ourselves. I mean, we are first tier cyber power in the sense of, if you look at the, you know, various metrics in terms of the ecosystem of our cybersecurity, the cybersecurity industry in the UK, and, you know, our applications to that, international security and so on, is makes us a cyber power, but we can't be complacent about that. So I think because that's more central to the debates that that are being had, there is probably a greater awareness of it, and a great awareness of the importance of getting it right. And it could also be that, you know, the way that MPs work is that if they get lots of constituents' emails about a particular issue, it sort of goes up the agenda quite quickly. Now, I can't really remember when I was the MP for Hales Owen and Raleigh Regis, cybersecurity was not something which was front and center of my email box. Maybe because of some of the things that have been going on, there are more emails going into MPs' boxes about the importance of security and resilience. So all those things, I think, are contributing to a greater awareness, and a greater need to debate it and get it right.
And of course, with this growth in data services and data centric capabilities, the continuing evolution of AI. You know, AI is in no way going to take away the need for this growth demand in cyber skills. In fact, if anything, it's going to require more cyber skills. So, you know, I was just remarking to somebody yesterday that I feel as though I'm living today in the science fiction of my childhood, which is an interesting time to live in, but not its challenges.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's an interesting way of putting it. I mean, you know, as you say, that the skills issue is, you know, is pretty central, and whatever comes along in terms of AI, there needs to be a skills agenda which sort of deals with that transformation, if you like. You know, we need not only sort of technical specialists, but we need much more cross-fertilization into other disciplines. We need employees who would be doing a role to be aware, you know, to be cyber aware and to have much more sensitivity. So it's not like a distinctive. It's a very holistic skill strategy that we need, because of the fact that, as you say, what will the contours of this whole landscape look like in 15 or 20 years' time? It's pretty unimaginable, actually, in some ways, because I was thinking about my career the other day when I started a company, an internet company, in 1995, and my first client was a music company that said, what do you think is going to happen to the consumption of music with this thing, the internet and email, in 1995? Now, that was a fairly interesting question at that point. But what actually then evolved in that market? I mean, you could probably have predicted some of the contours of it. But if you think about that radical disruption of that particular industry. And so, you know, where we're going to be in 20 years' time, I don't know. Again, it's part of. So we need to have skills readiness, and we need to have that's why I kind of bang on about this societal readiness, because, you know, we're going to be living in a very, very different environment.
I was just reading on the BBC website this morning, they're talking about the potential for building data centres in space, you know, so, you know, so, you know, the ability to have a on tap 24/365 solar power from the sun by building a base on the moon, versus, you know, the challenges that we have in terms of energy consumption here on the Earth. So, I mean, that's a, you know, again, talk about living in the world of science fiction, but in 10 years' time, we could have data centers on the moon as a mainstream operation.
Mm-hmm. And that is a direct reference to childhood, Space 1999, Moonbase Alpha.
Exactly. I think we're all of an age where the workplace we entered is not the workplace of today, and things have changed enormously. And in many ways, and really where we started this conversation, I suppose, our inseparable reliance on data and technology today makes us incredibly vulnerable. And the need for business resilience is more important today than ever before.
Well, I think it also, you know, that is also, again, part of the CSBR, coming back from the moon to the CSBR. The other area is this kind of stuff around data and privacy that we touched on a little bit in the AI and the healthcare work, which is, again, I think my view about that is that citizens have been a little bit passive about the idea of their own data. You know, somehow, you know, there's this whole world of algorithms and whatever, and we've become quite passive in relation to what, you know, that means. And I think that debate will probably, you know, that's going to be an important debate as well, about that balance between, as we were discussing in the AI and healthcare work, that, you know, there is an incredibly rich data resource in the NHS. How do we leverage that as a national resource while maintaining data privacy? You know, so I think that's going to become increasingly important, because people's identity is, you know, going to be increasingly wrapped up with what that means in terms of their data. You know, they're a data point, so I think that's also an important stream of thinking. As we move forward into this new world, as it were.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister was on the news just the other day, wasn't he, in very vocally stating that both the NHS and the NHS data was categorically not for sale. Equally, as we discussed at the round table, the challenge around maintaining UK sovereignty is that the vast majority of online services are from tech companies that come out of the States. We rapidly under index, really, when it comes to UK capability in that area.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know whether it's a point you made or was made, which is about, you know, quite a lot of our sovereign data is actually not held within our jurisdiction, you know, and I think that raises some issues again about kind of porous international boundaries, and how do we, if we think about a cybersecurity and resilience bill, and you're talking about large transnational companies which are holding data in the cloud, which is kind of outside of our sovereign control, how do we enforce regulations in that context? So I think that does raise, you know, that raises a whole, you know, other series of issues.
Definitely, given increasingly complex and confusing geopolitical trends.
Well, if you can explain what's going on at the moment in terms of the geopolitics of the world, then that would be very illuminating, because I think the truth is I gave up predicting. I try not to predict things in the political and economic world, because all my predictions since about 2015 have not gone right. So I've given up predicting. I'm just kind of riding the wave of whatever the chaos is, but all I know is that it does, you know, I think we are moving, that there is a kind of new world order if that, or world disorder evolving in front of us. You know, it's difficult to predict because, you know, you then, you know, you turn on the television or look at your phone and you see that the president has, you know, decided that he's going to kind of pause these tariffs that he's introduced. And, you know, it's a bit of an exhausting kind of merry-go-round. You're not quite sure where it's going to all land. But I think it's particularly the US relationship with China, it's almost like a proxy conflict going on there on the trade side. And if, you know, and that does have big implications when we think about, you know, cybersecurity and security more generally. We've been used to having reliable partners. And, you know, for good or ill, it's a bit difficult to define at the moment where our reliable partners are. Because we made the decision to leave the EU, whatever your views were about that. So our UK relationship with Europe is slightly problematic. And now one of our longstanding allies is kind of appears to be a bit unreliable.
And not just an ally financially, but an ally in defence as well, defence and intelligence, that, you know, the UK and the US, along with other partners, have been, you know, at the heart of the Five Eyes community. And when that relationship is shaken, it has significant ramifications for global order, not just for the UK.
Yeah, well, definitely. And it does get translated into implications about, again, you know, thinking about that in relation to the Cybersecurity and Resilience Bill, you know, which is it's going to be landing in not a particularly stable environment. So, yeah, a few challenges then.
Might need to put it through a very quick reiteration as things unfold. Who knows?
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, so it's very much an uncertain time ahead. Uncertainty for business, which means business resilience is absolutely important. Massive changes in technology and the way in which we consume and create and share data, which continues to have cybersecurity challenges. And it's great to know that the CSBR is going to be at the heart of all of that in helping to shape and create policy going forward. A great opportunity for industry to be able to be involved in government policy making as well, rather than sometimes feeling as though it has been forced upon them.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that two-way thing is really important, and that dialogue to make sure that, you know, as you say, thinking gets translated into things which actually help people working in industry and business. I think that's, you know, that's pretty fundamental. So it's more of a bottom-up rather than a top-down process.
Yeah. And I think we'll be coming back together, James, as the CSBR matures, as products come out of the various roundtables, and as legislation itself becomes more clarified as well. There's certainly plenty to discuss as we go through 2025 into 26, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We should meet again and contemplate the further changes that may have happened by that time.
Fantastic. James, thank you very much for your time today. Ellie, thank you as always for your assistance and being my wing person, trying to be gender neutral there. Thanks, guys. This has been really interesting, and certainly never more so have we lived up to that saying, may you live in interesting times. This has been the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And if there's areas that you think that the CSBR should be looking at, then feel free to get in touch with us and we'll feed that back to James. And if there are areas you'd like us to discuss in future podcasts, then don't forget to let us know that as well. If you'd liked it, make sure you subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, I've been Mike Gillespie. This is the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business.